There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for live local talk the next couple of hours on this day after Election Day, at least primary runoff Election Day here in the state of Alabama. And lots to do on today's show. By the way, too, show intro may get a new clip from Governor Ivey as she had her presser earlier declaring the mask ordinance for the state of Alabama. She tells you in there, and we'll listen to this in hour number two of the show. She says, I told y'all I could bring this. And I'm paraphrasing. I told y'all I could bring in a mask ordinance, and now y'all didn't do right, and I'm putting it in. So, governor's spoken. Y'all are in trouble. We got a mask ordinance statewide here in Alabama. All right. So I just want to put that out. Let it be on record. We're going to work to have that as part of the show opener going forward. Tisk, tisk, y'all. Y'all did it to ourselves here. And guest in studio, mentioned this morning, exciting on so many levels to have Congressman Bradley Byrne in studio this hour to talk with me on the day after Election Day. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
It's a pile of stuff to talk about today. I don't know that we'll get to it all, but I want to start off and talk about your reflections on yesterday and the election, and then I want to talk about some of the things going on in Washington and what's happening up there. So, yeah, let's talk about yesterday. As you watched this, you're somebody who had, you had a stake in both elections that we were voting in here in our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
AL1 and Senate race,
yeah.
You're connected to both of them.
Yeah.
So how does that, when you sit and watch it, did one pique your curiosity more than the other, or?
Oh, yeah. I didn't have any curiosity about the Senate race. Senate race was over before it got started. Jeff Sessions never had any chance of winning this race from the moment he got in. And, the fact that he got beat by 22 points doesn't surprise me in the least.
That big didn't surprise you?
No, I wasn't surprised. And all the polls that I saw from the moment Jeff got in until through yesterday, except for his polls, they never had him getting out of the 30s. None of them. None of mine had him getting out of the 30s.
Right.
Even when we did, projected head-to-heads between him and me and Tommy Tuberville and me, and him and Tommy Tuberville, Jeff just never had any chance of winning this race. It couldn't even be close. And, you can argue that it was the president's, tweets in the last few weeks, but he was like that at the very beginning.
You think that was decided way back?
Oh, no. He never had any, not even the slightest chance of winning the race. So the only thing I was curious about that was, all right, how badly is he going to be defeated? And he got defeated in every county but three, one of them being Mobile. He got beat pretty badly in Baldwin County. It's just a old-fashioned butt-whipping. And it was going to be that way from the beginning. Take Tommy Tuberville out. If I had been in, I'd have won it that big. If any of the other people running the race had been in there, they'd have beaten him. Yesterday was not a decision to vote for Tommy Tuberville so much as it was a decision to vote against Jeff Sessions. And that's the way it was going to be from the beginning.
It's interesting to watch it in numbers of votes, like you talked about, in percentages of win, but also the geography of it. The three counties, leaving, 64 counties that did not go to Sessions. But early yesterday evening, and I was commenting on, I think this is a foregone conclusion that Tuberville's going to win this because so many of those wiregrass counties that Sessions had won, they won after another, went to Tuberville, and not by the narrowest of margins,
no,
but a pretty decent, they flipped.
Well, they didn't flip. What happened was all the votes that went to other people went instead to Tuberville, which was that anti-Jeff Sessions vote. That's what all that was. And we saw that back in November. So that didn't surprise me. The more interesting race to me, obviously, was our local race. Jerry Carl and Bill Hightower, both of them friends of mine, and they had a very intense race, as you know, because they kept running a lot of raid commercials on
yes.
your show.
Yes.
And I knew it was going to be close. I think Jerry, you know, obviously ran a really good race. It was close in every county but Mobile, and Jerry just really wiped the floor in Mobile County, and that's how he won.
Yeah, when you look at that, I mean, you came out and endorsed Jerry Carl.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big turning point in this. But when you do look at that, to have a huge win out of AO1, obviously, you watch this and study it. Mobile County, 5,000 votes, advantage for Jerry Carl. But elsewhere in AL1, that was not the story. It was a lot tighter.
It was tight all over.
Or losing to Hightower.
Well, Jerry won Washington County by just a little bit, mm-hmm. and then Hightower won each of the other counties by just a little bit. So obviously Mobile County was the determinant. But if you go back and actually break things down and you look at it, it's actually a little more nuanced than that. So, when I ran the first time, I had a special election runoff. I won by 6 points. Jerry won yesterday by 4 or 5 points. So I know what it's like to go through that. It's like you just grind it out the last 2 or 3 weeks, and a lot of it's just getting your vote out. Mm-hmm. So hats off to Jerry. Bill Hightower is a good guy. I like him, and he's continuing to have a good business career, I know. And Jerry and I talked this morning. We're already working on what I can do to help him win the general election in the fall, which I think is probably a foregone conclusion, but he's got to run a campaign. And also to help him make this transition into the position that I hold now.
Yeah, I asked him that this morning. He came on the show, and I asked him about that. And he said, well, he couldn't even say the number of texts that were on his phone and calls in there. But, yeah, that I would like, as somebody here in AO1, that he is ready if he wins in the general, which, you know, it looks like it, but don't put anything past, you know. But
right.
If he wins in the general, that he has some leg up going in, because I've said this many times, even when you're not here, you went in and got key committee assignments really quickly in Washington that moved AL1 along a lot faster than I thought. I was surprised by the timing of that.
Well, we're going to work on that. In fact, when Jerry and I talked this morning, we talked about a sort of a strategy. First of all, he's got to sit down and make sure he knows what he wants, and that's his decision, not mine or anybody else's. And then we'll work with, we being the other members of the Alabama delegation and some of my other friends and people who've just taken a liking to this district, mm-hmm. you know, like Steve Scalise, Liz Cheney. How can we do the right things to position Jerry to be in the committees he wants to be on? And so we're starting that work right now, and we'll have Jerry, and I'm going to get him to come up. I'll take him around and introduce him to people. I'm going to totally debrief him on all the stuff that I'm working on. He'll have 100% of that. My staff will get him briefed up on all that. So his goal and my goal with him is to make sure when he gets there and starts voting on January the 3rd of next year, I mean, he is ready to go. He's slick. And I think he will be.
It seems to me there should be some committee assignments that are just AL1 preferences, not even by the elected official. You know, there's some that just scream AL1.
Yeah. I got to admit, I really thought I was going to be on appropriations mm-hmm. when I first got elected. In fact, John Boehner promised me that. And then Martha Roby over in the 2nd District said I want it, so he gave it to her. Yep. And so my consolation prize was being on the House Armed Services Committee, which I worked pretty hard to get. And guess what?
Big.
It was better than a consolation prize.
Yeah.
I was in the right place at the right time to do all the stuff that I did. And if I hadn't been on that committee, it wouldn't have happened.
Right. If you would have gotten appropriations like you wanted,
I probably wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing. Like, for example, the National Defense Authorization Act that we put through committee 2 weeks ago adds an EPF that will be made by Austell. Okay. I got that in there because I'm a member of the committee.
Right.
I'm a member of the right subcommittee. So, I mean, being on House Armed Services Committee for me has been just like the best part of my experience in Washington is being able to do that. So, but I don't want to speak for Jerry. Jerry may have some other things. So
well, you're not. It's just on me. I think there should be a list of specific AL1 committee
assignments. Something having to do with fish, probably.
Yeah, there is that one, yes. You know that. All right, we're coming right back. More with Congressman Bradley Byrne, talking about yesterday's election cycle through his eyes. Also, we'll talk about what's happening in Washington now. And PPP, what about some extensions there? And what might be next? More money coming? Or are we going to hold up here for the economy? We'll talk about that with you when we get back.
You're
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile Wednesday style. Glad to have you along and good to have Congressman Bradley Byrne in studio this hour. Lots to talk about, and I'm kind of picking his brain here on yesterday. He had a dog in both hunts. If you look at the Senate race runoff and the AL1 Republican primary runoff, and perspective on this. I got a bunch of questions coming in here on this. Number one, a lot of people here on the Club for Growth portion of this asking questions. This was the only AL1 was the only race that Club for Growth was not successful for in getting their candidate, right?
In Alabama, yeah. That's right.
So this was the one. This is the trend breaker.
Gosh, I don't think that they had a big impact on the Senate race. I've already told you why the Senate race.
Right, you thought it was already done.
The District 2 race over there in southeast Alabama.
What a swing.
I was really surprised by that. And, you know, there's no other explanation than those ads and things that they did on behalf of Barry Moore actually worked over there. Jeff Coleman, who lost that race, is a very well-known, very well-respected businessman over there and poured, I think, $2 million of his own money into it and lost by, 20 points?
Yes.
I'm surprised by that. And, you know, to have it come out so differently what we had here, because Club was all in this race, big time. If I must have had 12 different pieces of mail from them.
You got it? Do you?
I get you know, those big.
Do you think anybody cross references and goes, "Oh, the irony of sending this to"?
No, they don't do that. They just spitting that stuff out, and I get them in clumps and throw them in the trash can. But I can't explain why our race turned out the way it did, and the one over there was so different. I can't explain that,
but it sure was
very different.
I want to talk about the Senate race again, too. And you mentioned this from when Jeff Sessions got in. It was in late October of 19, yeah. Got in and made that announcement. You were not happy at that point.
No.
I remember talking with you, you were not happy at all.
No.
You said you were told that he was not going to run.
I talked to him personally. And I'm not the only one. Other people, some of my key supporters, said before I get involved with Bradley, I want to hear it from Jeff himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got in, I said, he has no chance of winning. I mean, we just proved that yesterday, he had no chance of winning. And the only thing he could accomplish by getting in that race is blocking me, which is what he did.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Okay, so Monday morning quarterback in here.
Yeah.
Rerun it. We hit the, we get in the time machine, we go back. Jeff Sessions does not get in the race.
Right.
Do we even have a runoff? Do you think you would have been in the runoff with Tuberville? Do you think you would have? You think it would have been a runoff?
I think John Merrill would have stayed in the race. That would have forced a runoff between Tuberville and me. My last poll in February, where we did head to heads between Jeff and me and Tuberville and me, I beat Tuberville by 13 points.
So it was that split of your vote to the Sessions.
Exactly.
Let's ask you this question, because these are stacking up. So, what's next?
I don't know.
Because people last night on Twitter were asking me, is this the beginning of the preparation for the gubernatorial campaign for Bradley Byrne?
No, there's a guy named Will Lanesworth, Lieutenant Governor, who I think intends to run for governor. If Governor Ivey doesn't, I mean, everybody's assuming she's not, but I'm not thinking about running for governor. I'm really not. Now, you can't ever say never in politics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not thinking about running for anything right now. I'm thinking about what I need to do to keep myself out of the house because Rebecca's tired of me hanging around. It's you know, there's an ebb and flow to politics. You got to understand that. And right now, it's just not flowing for me. And it may not, you know, at my age, may not flow again. That's okay. That's cool. I've had a good career, and I'm not, I've had a great legal career, and I've enjoyed the public life that I've had. This has been a great job being in Congress, but, you know, doesn't define who I am.
Right. So, not closing the door, but nothing you're looking at or pursuing.
I have nothing that I'm pursuing right now, but you never say never because you never know what's going to happen.
Well, let's talk about what's going on between now and then, mm-hmm. right, and the work you still have to do in Washington.
Yeah.
And I want to, first of all, talk about the PPP, because this one's kind of clear and present, has a deadline, and I saw you had tweeted about it the other day.
Right.
That is it is an extension of the current PPP, or what? Explain this to us.
It's an extension of the time for people to apply for the PPP loans that we put out, you know, several months ago, because we've got money left that has not been accessed. Now, you know, we ran through the first batch of money real quickly, but when we appropriated that second batch of money, it went a lot slower because the big guys got in first.
Yeah.
And so it was the little guys that were getting in the second, and they just weren't, you know, just, the loans just weren't big enough to use up that money. Now, I think in the next coronavirus bill, there's going to be something in there to allow people who presently have PPP loans to access more, but it ain't going to be for the big guys.
Because I think about it this way, it's kind of today being tax day.
Right.
Right. Circle that's going on here, because you need to keep businesses open,
right,
and people working,
right,
so they can pay taxes into the system, so we can pay money out to keep businesses,
right,
open and people working and,
right,
paying taxes in,
right,
the system. I mean,
right,
now, I mean, I, could we just stop and say everybody hold on to their money? Probably not, obviously. But how long does that, how long is there going to be artificial push there, and how long till you go, all right, I think we've done enough. We've got this engine primed. Y'all do it.
Well, we've had two good months of job numbers back to back. There are lots of other indicators that the economy had made a turn.
Yes.
Whether it was in May or June, we can all sit there and argue about the economy has clearly made a good turn. Whether it's turned enough and whether the turn is sustainable, we're having some arguments about. My concern right now is, I kind of threw a lot of this out because I knew what the desperate circumstances were in back in the spring. My concern is now is the deficit. I mean,
good thing to be concerned with.
If we don't appropriate another dime, our deficit for this fiscal year is going to be close to $4 trillion.
The biggest ever.
I mean, the deficit for June alone was over $850 billion, okay? You can't keep doing that, all right? I know there's this modern monetary theory, MMT, out there that says deficits don't matter. Well, balderdash, yes, they do. And I could give you all the great eminent historians have given all these great answers to that about why it's not true. But your common sense tells you that people aren't going to buy Treasury bills or U.S. savings bonds forever. And they're just going to sit there and say, hey, this can just go on until there's no end to it. They're not going to do that. So we've got to get our heads around that. But I understand we've got this disease, and we probably haven't done enough of what we need to do just on the health side, okay? So I'm sure there are going to be some health provisions in this bill that I'm going to feel compelled to support. But the stuff we're doing to support the economy, I'm beginning to have, you know, real concerns about because of just the sheer price tag.
Looking at text here from Josh says, any potential for PPP to be opened up for other organizations that didn't qualify since their money left, like 501c5 organizations?
Yeah. We had a real battle over the other 501c's outside of 501c3's. And I'm not sure why. I don't really get the argument against it. If you're okay with 501c3's getting it, why not, like Chambers of Commerce, I think they're 501c6, why can't they get it? And I never got a good answer from that. But they said it was a pretty hard and fast no on that. I'm going to be very much for opening it up. I don't know why you'd exclude one type of 501c organization over another.
Because, I mean, if the idea is to keep people on the payroll,
right?
They employ people. They have people on the payroll.
And why not chambers of commerce and trade associations?
I mean, they employ people.
They employ people, and they're also a big part of keeping the economy going.
Right.
I was just down yesterday in Foley with the South Baldwin Chamber doing stuff. I mean, you realize how much they're doing to help that economy down there in South Baldwin County. They're critical, so I agree. I think we should open it up.
Okay. Is that something that might come up in this second?
Yeah, I think it might.
So 501Cs are okay. Threes are okay. 501C3s are okay, but anything 4, 5, 6 is not?
So think of a 501C3 is your typical nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a United Way agency is usually a 501C3. A 501c6 is like a chamber of commerce or a trade association. I just don't understand why you would make a distinction from one to the other. And no one has yet been able to tell me why they made that distinction in the bill, because we pushed back. There were a bunch of us that pushed back. I didn't even know about it till some of the Chamber of Commerce people told me. And I said, wait a minute, why would we exclude them? But we did. And so I hope that is something else that we take another look at when we get this next bill.
Just a minute left here until the break. But I wonder about the political strength, muscle of AL1 and our state in Washington. You know, I continue the way I fear the deficits. I also fear the loss of a congressional district in Alabama, going from 7 to 6.
Yeah, we don't know yet. We're on the bubble. You and I have talked about that before. Alabama's on the bubble for losing a congressional seat.
That means money, doesn't it? That means money that does not come to Alabama.
Well, yeah, it's used to calculate certain grants and everything. But to go from 7 House members to 6 House members, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have a game of political musical chairs there. Before you get to there, the legislature is going to have to redistrict. Now, fortunately, Chris Pringle, locally here, chairs that committee.
Yeah, those are good things.
So we're in a strong position there, I hope.
Coming right back, more with Congressman Byrne on Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Good to talk with Congressman Bradley Byrne. And a lot to talk about, number one, yesterday's race where he had a dog in both hunts, but also what's going on right now in Washington. When is it back to Washington?
Well, we're going back Monday.
Okay.
And we'll be there for at least 2 weeks straight, regular 5-day weeks. Well, nothing's regular anymore up there, but
right.
We're there for 5 days each week. And we may be there a third week because of how long it may take us to get through the coronavirus bill. Then, you know, Congress traditionally is off for August. And so I think they're trying to adhere to that because then we're going to be off in October for everybody to campaign.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot of time to get, you know, some important stuff that needs to get done.
Very important things on, number one, and we'll circle back to the economy, but this actually is part of the economy as well. You got Speaker Pelosi basically saying if the president's plan to send kids back to school, he wants them to get sick and cause sickness, or, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something about at that level. Is it that cut and dry that if kids go back, they're going to get sick? And
no. We actually had a hearing about this on the Education Committee that I sit on. And we talked about, all right, what does it mean? You know, what does it mean for schools to be shut down? What does it do to kids? And it absolutely hurts kids not to be in school, okay? They don't make up that time.
Right.
They lose it, and they don't get it back. So missing school is a big deal. And virtual school, for most kids, doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
It's a split decision in my house. One of them it does not work for. I went through it.
I mean, it just, for a lot of kids, it doesn't work. And for the kids that need it the most, it doesn't work. And the pediatricians and other health professionals are telling us that kids do not contract this disease and get serious symptoms. Now, there is a small percentage everywhere you go about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the percentage of children, we're talking about people under 21 who get this disease and have a serious case of it, is just infinitesimally low. So the threat here is just not that great. Now, every time you send your kids to school, there's a threat, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as zero threat because that's just part of life. But this is about as low a threat with this particular disease as you could have. So it's clearly medically okay for kids to go back to school unless they have an underlying health condition, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if they've got an underlying health condition, they're just like anybody else with an underlying health condition, they need to stay home. But the vast majority of kids should be able to go back to school. Now, schools are going to have to look different.
Mm-hmm.
The desks are going to be spread out. You may have certain classes that are being done in the gym. There may not be any sports, just to be perfectly honest with you. I drove by Fairhope, the stadium at Fairhope yesterday, and I thought, How are you going to put those all those people in that stadium sort of sitting shoulder to shoulder? You can't. So I think we're going to have to make some, you know, accommodations for what's going to have to happen. And we may do with high schools and elementary schools like they're going to do with colleges, which is school's going to be over by Thanksgiving.
And, you know, looking at that, that was weird to me at first. I said, well, I thought that they would delay going back and then go further, but they want to get back and get out by Thanksgiving because of the
flu season.
Yeah, flu season and the next wave.
Flu season.
Yeah.
And so I think you're going to see everybody trying to get everything done before Thanksgiving. So you're going to see things like that, but I think kids need to go back to school. And I don't have kids in school anymore. I have grandchildren. I'm going to tell you, I don't think there's a problem with my grandchildren going back to school.
You know, the argument would be made, I guess, this never that, well, they're asymptomatic, but they come home and they give it to their granddad.
Well, if we're concerned about granddad, that when they can't visit granddad, okay?
Yeah. It's more important for them to go to school.
Yeah. Here's who I'm worried about. I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you. I'm worried not about the little kids. I'm worried about the bigger kids because they're the ones, unfortunately, that have been the least responsible since we've opened things up.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to be going around and having these close interactions in large groups without face masks, then they go and visit grandmama. I mean, shame on them. You know, they should have more consideration for people that are more at risk here than that. If they're going to go do that, they need to stay away from grandmama.
All right. So part of that, too, is key to getting kids back in school so people can go back to work. I have people asking questions on the text line now about the unemployment parameters here. Where are we with those payments?
Well, they run out at the end of July unless we act to extend them. And
people are telling me they can't get people to come back to work.
Yeah. So I voted for them the first time. I didn't like it, okay, because I feared exactly what has happened would happen. People are making more money. Some people are making more money drawing unemployment than they made in their jobs, and they're not coming back to work. So I've talked to a number of people that have restaurants that say they're open, but they can't open as much as they are allowed to, even under the restrictions we have now, because they don't have enough wait staff. And just about, go pay attention as you're driving around, how many help wanted signs you see, how many now hiring signs you see. It's because they can't get their folks back to work. So I'm just not inclined to vote for any sort of an extension of it, and certainly not at $600 extra a week.
You know, I don't know how we would ever solve this, but I've had this discussion over the decades. When federal plans come out and they put X number of dollars into something to represent, we are so different as a nation. The cost of living in Mobile, Alabama versus San Francisco, right, California is a different thing. So that $600-something may still not be anything close to they can make working in San Francisco, but you come back here where the cost of living is less. It's sometimes people say, well, it's not worth going back.
The argument when we adopted it was we don't have time to work out all those nuances.
I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, but that's
forward,
a net effect that, you know, you get.
You try to do something that's one size fits all in a country this big and this diverse, and it doesn't work. So that's a key example of where it hadn't worked.
So shift gears back to a second to the your perspective on this Senate race and what Senator Jones. I mean, obviously you did the research into what it would be like to campaign against Senator Jones. Maybe y'all had done that. So what do you expect them to bring on the other side? I hear, you know, it's $8 and $10 million in the war chest. We've got these things that have come out about the hedge fund and the player, you know, that affect Tuberville's campaign. Is that where they're going? Do you think there's other? I mean, do you think this is a repeat of all hands on deck coming from National DNC, coming from the media, New York Times?
I think they will. I think if they haven't already, which I'm sure they have.
They're doing a little bit this morning.
I'm sure they're digging, trying to find more stuff. I mean, who knew about that stuff about Roy Moore in 2017?
Right.
I didn't have any clue about that. So they're digging. And one of the things that we talked about was, and I sat down with my family and everybody, I said, look, they're going to make up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to be prepared for them to make up stuff. Now, I got a digital ad today for Doug, and he sort of doubles down on being Mr. Democrat by saying, by seemingly criticizing Tuberville for being supportive of President Trump, and then talks about expanding Medicaid. I'm like, Doug, I don't know how that's going to get you votes in Alabama.
But I've seen the flip side of his ads lately that have been stepping back from that National Democrat thing and talking more like a moderate, even though ignoring the votes he took, but I mean more of the moderate and the mask commercial that he did.
This didn't sound like they were trying to moderate. I
wonder if they just got different messages going through different platforms.
I don't know why they would send me something that would have that message, but
same reason Club for Growth was sending you mailers.
I don't know, but I think that they think they can keep the seat.
Though really?
I think they can. Think they can, and I think they're going to throw a lot at it. Now, the one thing that worked for Tuberville in this runoff is to just keep as low a profile as he possibly can. And I think he's probably going to use that strategy going forward because, let's face it, if 60% of the people in Alabama vote for President Trump in November, who among those people are going to come back over and vote for Doug Jones for Senate? Man, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, the turnout machine is in place here with President Trump on the ballot. The turnout machine for Republicans is definitely in place. All right, coming right back, more with Congressman Byrne right here on Midday Mobile, online at fmtalk1065.com, which, by the way, online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Do you feel safe sending your children back to school this fall? Let's see the latest here. Refresh. 89% of y'all say yes. So that's where the poll is right now. Unscientific for entertainment purposes only, but usually correct.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
To 1250 FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile. Congressman Bradley Byrne, our guest in the studio. Start with this text from Superbomb says, I'm a Republican. I'm voting for Trump. I am not voting for Tuberville. He has not told me anything that he likes Trump more than Sessions likes Trump. I did not vote for Ivy for the same reason. I'm not falling in lockstep just because he's the nominee. All right, so are you going to vote for Doug Jones? Or are you going to leave that one blank? Which, by the way, people still don't realize they can do that. You can leave the oval blank.
You can, and I talked to some people that did that yesterday. I encouraged them not to do that, right. But there were some people that did that. Look, Doug Jones and I are personal friends. I've got nothing bad to say about him personally, but he votes wrong in the United States Senate, okay? Right. And whatever misgivings you might have about Tommy Tuberville, he's going to vote right a lot more often than Doug Jones is.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that sounds like that's a pretty sort of a grubby way to do it, but that's just the way it is. And when you're counting heads up in Washington, you need to count enough Republican heads so that we get Republican stuff done. Otherwise, you turn it over. And if you this idea that Doug or any other Democrat is going to be moderate, that's ridiculous. They can't be moderate.
Maybe one time he did that. The other times, I was thinking, oh, he'll go moderate here. He's going to be, because at that point, I was thinking, okay, he's strategizing for the general election. He's going to, and he didn't.
No.
Doug surprised me.
Doug is a believer, okay? This is not some put-up thing for him. He is voting the way he truly believes. Now, to some extent, I admire that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
What he believes doesn't match up with what the people of Alabama believe. And that's not who you want in the United States Senate.
What about those other forces, though, that believe it coming in? I mean, you can. Do we have a situation here that is like a repeat of 2017, or we're not looking at this? I mean, we're looking at a Tommy Tuberville. Can he lose?
Sure, anybody can lose.
Is there a significant chance that he loses?
No.
Okay.
I don't think, you know, like the stuff that came out at the end of the runoff, I don't think that's enough to beat him in November.
Yeah, I didn't either. People thought that was like white hot, and I said, "It's some of it's too complex. There's some unknowns. There's no smoking gun directly."
It's hard to make a 30-second commercial about it. I guess that's the other way of putting it. But you know, who knows what we don't know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about his background to know if there may be something else out there. I just don't know. The truth of the matter is, though, is that 60% plus of the people in Alabama are going to vote for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them are going to come across and go back over to the Democratic side and vote for Doug Jones? I just don't see that happening.
No, it's going to be extremely small.
Very small.
What do you think here, looking back home in Alabama and the situations with the coronavirus? We had the governor today with the statewide mask ordinance. What a to me, that mask ordinance is from the governor giving protection to municipalities, giving protection to businesses. But this all goes back to a question of protection and liability.
Well, I do. No, I think everybody should be concerned on this liability front because, you know, you've got lawyers out there that's their job is to go out there and find people to sue. And this is a perfect sort of place to go after people and say, hey, my client got sick. They were in your store. Bang, we're going to sue you. But it's more than that. And I think what Governor Ivey's trying to say is, hey, everybody, wake up. Wake up. We've had a real breakout in this disease. Mm-hmm. It's beginning to stress some of our hospitals. We don't want to get to the point where I'm having to shut down.
Well, that was
everything.
Where I was going. So is that...
It's a shot across the bow.
Yeah.
And I hope all of us hear that shot across the bow because we darn sure don't want to go back to lockdown time. And I don't see us going back to lockdown. But as a practical matter, we know that these masks help stop the spread of the disease.
You've got a mask on in here right now.
I have a mask on right now. Yeah. And I wear it whenever I'm inside. Now, I don't...
Yeah. Outside.
I don't wear it outside, okay? Like, when I went fishing last week, right. I didn't wear a mask.
Right.
There was a group of us, but I didn't wear a mask. Right. And I don't wear a mask when I'm out working in the yard or anything like that. But, you know, when I'm in a building and doing this sort of stuff, I wear a mask. I also wash my hands a lot, and I wash them the right way.
Yes.
And, you know, there's just two of us in this room together. Right. I'm not in, like, groups of, you know, huge numbers of people.
No, and you and our distance and all that. But the doing this, you said to me what a lot of people have, you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for others. But I could also argue you do it the way I say I do it, for the economy.
Well, that's true. Because if the thing keeps spreading, if the rate of spread keeps going up,
and we got to shut down.
We got to shut down again. I don't want to do that.
I mean, I don't like either option, but if I know it is a zero-sum game, which somebody can argue that it's not, but if you said you can wear a mask or you can go through shutdown.
Well, it's pretty easy.
I'd wear a mask.
I wear my mask. Now, I'm having to wear a different type of mask in Washington because these darn cords hurt my ears. You sit in these hearings for hours on end, your ears just start aching. So I have to have a different type of mask up there. But I wear my mask, and I'm not making a political statement. I'm just trying to get through this darn thing.
I will argue, like I have this week, that if somebody did, not that you are, but somebody wanted to make a political statement, you could make a pro-Trump political statement by wearing a mask. That wearing that mask leads to businesses being able to stay open, people employed, economy coming back. You know, it's already coming back, but heading the right direction. And, I mean, that's a big plank of the platform the president needs in November.
Yeah. No, we need a good economy. There's no question about it. And that's going to be that's going to be what's going to pull him across the finish line. Is I don't, even in the midst of all of this, Biden is still not scoring well on the economy. So we've got to do everything we can to keep this economy moving.
He came out with his Rebuild Better plan the other day, but I have not had time to delve into this.
Well, what you're going to get out of a Joe Biden administration is he's not going to be in charge. He's got whatever cognitive issues he's got. He's not going to be in charge. The far left's going to be in charge, and they're going to dress everything up as something that it's not. So we passed this transportation bill through the House a couple of weeks ago. It's the Green New Deal. Mm-hmm. It's not even a transportation bill. So they're going to do stuff like that, Green New Deal, Medicare for All. That's what you're going to get out of them.
Oh, it's interesting that now I will argue that twice in a row the DNC has put a candidate, they got a candidate that they have to work behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
right, to push along. It's almost a figurehead to some degree, whether you're looking at Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden.
Or Joe Biden's going to be even more of a figurehead than Hillary Clinton was going to be.
And that this is a long-term question. I have this question for Republicans and Democrats. Is there no one else down in the dugout that can step up?
Well, you got to win a primary. And these days, winning party primaries is tough in both parties.
Do you think the primary process is limiting the quality of candidates overall in the country that we get in generals?
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it.
The primaries are causing that deficit.
Well, if you are, you know, a successful person, somebody that you would want to have in a responsible position like this, are you going to give up your lifestyle, your income, and go put yourself in the uncertainty, the incredible uncertainty, the almost arbitrary and capricious nature of our primary system?
No.
I mean, you're going to say, heck, I'm not going to get involved in that. So when you do get somebody good that's willing to do it, or crazy enough to do it, maybe the right answer, we should be flocking to those people, but we don't.
No, it's actually also quite often the opposite. Or those people are affected more by the negativity than the others.
Well, it's just you know, there's they come at you with such weird stuff, mm-hmm. sort of like they're like one of the Club for Growth commercials against me in my Senate race. And the main one was because I voted to reauthorize the Export-Import Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird stuff like that. And it's just sort of like coming out of nowhere. But the truth of the matter is that we need people who have been successful,
mm-hmm.
who've got something going for them. We need people of substance who are willing to do these jobs. Otherwise, look what you get up there. You know, we should be thanking people that are willing to do it. You know, look at somebody like Jerry Carl. Jerry's got a really strong business background. He's done well. He came up, you know, came up from nothing like a lot of other people. He's really done well. He's been good as county commissioner. He's a person of substance. We need more people like that in public office in general, but particularly in Washington, D.C.
Well said. Congressman, thank you for your time.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right, Congressman Bradley Byrne, our guest. We'll be back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. You might have seen lots more plexiglass in the mix lately. I got a man who's the man behind the plexiglass. Not literally, figuratively, although he might be literally behind the plexiglass. John Glover from Alpha Plastics joins us next, right here on Midday Mobile.